are listening to WWBC Coco, Merritt Island, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI Coco, Rockledge, 94.7 FM, W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, Indian Atlantic, Indian Harbor Beach, Satellite Beach, 100.7 FM, and W260CL Coco, 99.9 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, right here in Cocoa, Florida on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and we're heard on the World Wide Web.
Ms. Everywhere, Ellen? All over the world on 1510 WWBC. You can hit that listen live button on any one of your listening devices and catch us live. Or if you'd like to hear our show after the fact, we're on every single Monday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can catch our shows on the archives on that same station, 1510wwbc.com. Or you can go to our website, which is cedamediainc.com. Or, of course, our Facebook pages. Ceda posts a lot on Ceda, her personal one. However, I think you're out of friends, right? You can't put any more friends on there. So you got to go to the Viewpoint with Sita and Friends page. And we'll be happy to accept your friendship there. Thank you so much for all the great years. This is the official 14th year of the show. And all of our listeners who've been loyal listeners over the last 14 years, I just want to send a great big shout out to them. And a happy new year. And I hope your holidays were fantastic and your getting back to whatever the normal swing of things is for you.
Yeah, it's amazing that today is the 9th of January, 2023. Yeah. I remember writing on a chalkboard in 1972, way back in Trinidad and Tobago at the Brothers Presbyterian School. Do you have such a memory that stands out when you actually wrote a date?
Yes, for me it was, how old will I be when we hit the year 2000? That was, you know, part of what we did in school. It was like you learning to calculate. So yeah, when we get up to the 20s, you know, the 20 something, it's
what about was July 4th, 1776, but then the 1976. Mm-hmm. So it was that, and then you had to tell the story of the dash.
Yes,
those 100 years.
Well, you know, what about you, Danny? You have a date, maybe your marriage or anniversary or something that you stands out? His marriage?
Just his marriage, yep. Which is a great day to remember. We met Danny's lovely wife at our Christmas gathering that we had.
That was great fun.
You know, we get together here on Mondays for our listeners who are tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And we speak with people from all walks of life and all backgrounds. We speak with financial literacy folks. We speak with politicians. We speak with people who care about the environment. We speak with people who care about human beings with emotional health and mental health and physical health and whatever it is. We talk about kitchen table topics and things that are going on right here in Cocoa, Florida, and Brevard, and Florida in general. And we speak about things that are going on around the world. And we seem to have found our little niche, ladies, here.
Absolutely.
It's almost like, since I can't invite these ladies and Danny and people to my home, this is our home.
Yeah.
We pay our little rent, so to speak. It's kind of like supporting our station.
But it feels as nice as my own sofa, so I feel
it does. I mean, that's the joy of having a program on community radio and keeping it alive through sponsorships and friends and great guests that call in. And our guest today is no different. We have a lady that I met right after the Uvalde, Texas shooting at the elementary school. Dianara Salazar is the owner of Math and Math Specialist of Math Rocks, and she's supposed to call in on the second segment of the show if things go our way. And the first segment, one of our guests who had called in before, Nandita Bajaj, it's B-A-J-A-J, is calling in from Canada, actually, And we are going to speak a little bit, Miss Ellen. I don't know if you remember her. Nandita is the executive director of Population Balance.
I do remember, and I remember having the conversation, so that's awesome. So great to have her on the show again.
It is. And, you know, one of the things that Nandita and I do agree on, and I think almost every like-minded person, is that we envision a future where our human footprint is in a balance with life on Earth, enabling all species to thrive. And so with that, we're going to open our show today with our friend Nandita. Good morning, good afternoon, and thank you for calling in.
Thank you so much for having me, Sita. It's great to talk to you both.
Yes, and you know, you've done so many things since we last spoke with you, and we've added on our friend Ali Tambor. She is now a regular on our show. We call her our resident intern guest. And she's, and of course, Ellen O'Neill is here. So thank you so much for sponsoring today's segment and being part of our show. So bring us up to speed. You're no longer doing anything with the Fair Start, but you're now with 100% with Population Balance. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing with Population Balance, and you are the executive director.
Sure. At Population Balance, which is a U.S.-based nonprofit organization, we are taking a humane education approach, because that's my background. I did my graduate degree in humane education, which looks at the interconnectedness between human rights, animal protection, and environmental sustainability, and how we can combine all of those and take all of our advocacy efforts that consider all of those things. And specifically at Population Balance, we try to raise awareness about the impact of our human footprint, so which is our human population, human consumption, and how that impacts all the three things that I mentioned, how that impacts social justice, ecological justice, reproductive justice, the rights of children, etc. And we do that mostly through education. We run our own podcast called The Overpopulation Podcast. We offer free visits to university and high school classrooms, and also through conferences. And we also do academic research and publish material through that way. So it's a lot of education-focused work.
Yes. And I like that you allow people to have liberated choices and empower people to make choices about procreation and, you know, what else are we going to do with this planet? So many people are rushing to the southern border. And we see them coming with children. And you shake your head. And it's sometimes for me, it's disappointment that so many men and women of childbearing age are not educated on comprehensive sex education at a very responsible age and an appropriate age, so that we don't have to watch what's happening at the southern border with so many children being held by, I have to say, some of them are irresponsible. So where do you think we as human beings have failed in other countries to educate people that once these children are born, they have to be taken care of?
Right, exactly. And any time we start talking about the decision to have children, of course, it's the conversation becomes very complex because it's a very personal decision. People also see it as an isolated decision. Sometimes it's not a decision. Some of the examples that we see around the world, for most people, we do not have a choice over their own reproduction. Where decisions are kind of being made for them, depending on what kind of patriarchal society that they live in. And so that's part of what I study and what we educate about at Population Balance, is there's a name for this thing, these set of societal and institutional pressures that tell everyone that they have to have children and large families. And that's called pronatalism. And, you know, we know that having children or a child is one of the most important decisions that people make in their lives. And it can be a very meaningful and joyful life path. But we also know from research that the desire to become a parent, it's not universal. You know, it falls on a spectrum. There are those who experience absolutely no interest in parenthood, and there are those who have strong desires towards it. And then there's all of the different preferences in between. But if everyone is being pushed into this one singular life path, then you can see you end up in situations where people who bear the children, namely women who have to carry the child, give birth, and be primarily responsible for the child, bear the brunt of that burden, especially if they didn't have a lot of choice in bringing that child to the world. And then you brought up to say, what about the children? Who is thinking about the rights and the welfare of the children that are being brought into this world? And so that's part of the education that we do, is there's a huge connection between these societal and institutional pressures to have children and the problem of unchecked population growth and all of the things that come with that.
Well, you know, at some point we have to say having children has become like a political issue in many countries. We have a lot of politicians that gets involved in people's personal life and their choices, of course. But when the children are born, we all watch those same politicians. They just don't vote according to what they said prior to a woman giving birth. We are watching the homeless situation, and we're watching how many people are sleeping with just a blanket on the street or living in a car, and they have children with them. So how can we take this issue, which is so challenging, and it is a socioeconomic issue, it's a very unjust issue, how can we as human beings bring this to the attention of more people to say, if you're not going to care when a child is born, maybe you ought to reconsider getting involved in people's personal lives and their reproductive health.
Absolutely. And what you're bringing up there, Sita, is this type of institutional pronatalism. So this is separate from the pressure that we experience from our family, our grandparents to have children, or, you know, even our culture or media that says, having kids is the best thing in the world, and it's the most fulfilling decision you can make. And, you know, people may or may not have an opportunity to really think about what they're doing, but rather get influenced by what culture is telling them. But what you're bringing up, I see it as a different type of institutional pressure. So we were coming from our, you know, economy-driven pressures, pressures by religious leaders, pressures by political leaders, and they're all looking at reproduction as a means to a different end. Not looking at the welfare of the child or the parent, much more to grow the population, because they're afraid that not having enough people that are consumers or taxpayers is going to threaten the economy. It's going to threaten the corporations, the elite businesses, or, you know, looking at religious leaders who are worried about being outbred or outnumbered by, quote-unquote, the wrong kind of people. So you've got a concoction of all of these pressures that are incentivizing people to have children, whether it's sometimes it's just subtle tactics like child tax credits. The more kids you have, the more tax cuts you get. And sometimes it's egregious reproductive control methods like bans on abortions. bans on vasectomies, women being refused to the ligation surgery because she doesn't have any children. Then it starts becoming a lot more coercive, where choices are being taken away from people because of nationalistic, xenophobic, ethnocentric agendas. And that, to me, becomes a lot more insidious and dangerous when institutions start getting involved in reproductive matters. And it's been going on forever, but I feel it's much more prevalent right now, especially in Western countries where, you know, people are choosing to have smaller families, and that's threatening these leaders. But they're not having enough of the right kind of children, quote unquote.
That's so, correct. Nandito, what do you do as your group, or what can we all do if we can't have any conversations with families on how to control birth? And, you know, a lot of them go at it because they just don't know. We've got countries where you're not even allowed to speak to a woman about her husband wearing a condom or something like that. It's like absolutely verboten. What do we do?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think a big part of it is actually just raising awareness about the fact that, you know, having children, a lot of people think, you know, people have large families because that's just what they want, and that we should not be saying anything when it comes to reproduction. What happens when we don't talk about the importance of small families and family planning is someone else will take control over reproduction if we don't. And that someone else, as I said, are these patriarchal leaders.
Yes.
Who want to control women's fertility because they want to grow their population. And like you said, you know, in a lot of cultures, and I teach a graduate course on this, and so we look at, you know, 50 different countries. Women who don't or can't have children, they can be divorced, they can be sexually violated through coercion or violence, or they can be socially stigmatized. There's a couple hundred million women who wish to avoid a pregnancy, and they cannot. And it's not because they don't have access to contraceptives, although that's sometimes the case, if you simply cannot afford to buy contraceptives or they're not available in your community. But a lot of it, majority of the reasons people give for not using contraception is because they're not allowed to by their husbands, by their in-laws, by their communities. And so, you know, to answer your question in terms of how to get past these barriers is we need to make it okay to talk about population. Right now, I feel there's a lot of silencing on the issue of population. People feel that we cannot speak about it because reproduction is so personal. But it's not personal. If it were personal, we would not see the kind of unmet need that we have. We would not see women putting their bodies through so much trauma by having, you know, 9 or 11 children. We would not see 13-year-old girls getting married and having children. So a lot of it is actually just raising awareness about, you know, family planning is even essential health care.
Right. But, you know, in so many households, we see time and time again, we see people who have grandmothers and aunts and cousins and uncles and fathers and mothers and elders, and they just don't speak about this topic because for some people, it's cultural. I mean, you would think that people would speak about things like racial profiling, skin color, culture, income inequality, you know, you would think people would sit down and have these kitchen table topics. And as a result of having so many unwanted, unloved children, a lot of challenges mm-hmm. are here on earth.
Yep.
And we see mm-hmm. that time. I mean, I see the difference with a child that's wanted and loved and planned for. That child does have a fair start. And then you mm-hmm. see the children that people just happen to have one after the other, and they're thinking, well, somebody's going to help. You know, maybe I'll get the Medicaid. Maybe I'll get Section 8. Maybe my husband will get a second job. Maybe I'll get a second job. But the key here is they didn't plan, right? So how do you get more people to say, like my mother would say to us when we got pregnant, is who is going to mind this child?
Right.
Yes. And part of it is, of course, there needs to be, as you said earlier on, there needs to be a real overhaul of comprehensive sexual education within our own countries. The U.S. is a good place to start because our sex ed curriculum is so atrocious in so many states. And to actually educate people about the financial cost, the physical cost, the opportunity cost for your own fulfillment in life, your own career path, etc., for having children. But the second piece, of course, that you mentioned about socioeconomic inequality is also the kinds of policies our leaders have put into place, especially with the most recent bans and restrictions on abortion. Who do you think that hurts the most? It's women of color, women living in poverty, young women, 18 to 24 years old, who wanted to avoid the birth but could not and were forced to have a child.
Right, and now they have all these challenges. We have a few minutes left, and I wanted to ask you really quick, your organization, Population Balance, also challenges the word, two words, human supremacy. Can you define it and give us a couple of examples what human supremacy really is all about?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for asking that. It actually connects directly to what we're talking about, this bias, this obsession that our species has with growth, that we just need to keep growing and developing and taking and colonizing more and more of nature. So human supremacy is a worldview that we, as a species, we're one of millions of species, we're only one, but somehow we have come to this worldview that we are the only species that matters, and that all of nature and all the other beings only are important as long as they serve us. And so we are kind of this supremacist being.
Oh my right. gosh, Dr. B is going to love that
yeah.
word. You know, and I wanted to get back to the education. That this is Ellen. It's so great to have you on the show, and what an education I'm getting today as well. But remember when we had mm-hmm. the CETA, Dr., I forget, Choo-Choo was her first name. She was a pediatrician, and she was an epidemiologist where she went, like the CDC sent her to where there was epidemics. And remember they had that issue with teenage girls in Philadelphia, and they sent her there. So she figured she was going to do this comprehensive sex ed piece, right? She found out that the girls were asking questions like, can you get pregnant by sitting on concrete stairs?
Yeah, they were not educated.
They had no idea.
Right.
And the whole epidemic of what was going on, and it was a lot of the gang-related violence and so forth, too. It wasn't just about the teenage pregnancy. But it was such yeah. an eye-opener to say, wow, the public school system, we have really dropped the ball with comprehensive education
at the appropriate
ages.
Exactly, but I think
ages.
The parents, mothers,
true, absolutely.
You know, my mother had a third-grade education, but she knew where babies came from. Mm-hmm. And after having 11 live births, and of course in Indian families, a lot of like what Nandita was saying is the truth. But my mother knew enough to teach us where children came from and how not to get pregnant, because she suffered. She faced so many challenges through poverty and all that. But Nandita, I wanted to ask you, for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Nandita Bajaj, and she is the executive director of
balance.
balance. I want to say population control, which is what it really should be, right? But I wanted to ask you really quick. There's so many people in the United States who are really, really, really alarmed by the declining birth rate. And these people are running for office. Some of them are very wealthy, like the wealthiest man in the world, Elon Musk. And they're all talking about the declining birth rate and it creating such panic and havoc for people. And now you have every mo schmo who doesn't have two nickels to scrub together wants to procreate and have children with multiple women. How do we fix this?
I think we just have to keep exposing these people and saying they do not have our best interest at heart. These people are treating women as reproductive vessels for external agendas, whether it is to grow their economy, whether it is to, you know, produce more of their kind of people, you know, whether it is to solve the aging population crisis, whatever it is, having more children or pushing people to have children is not the answer. And I think we just need to keep calling it out, as you are doing on your show, as we are doing, you know, through our work, and sending in news pieces and saying, how are we allowing these people to actually put out news pieces that say, can we pay women to have more children? To bribe people to produce more offspring for other agendas? I mean, doesn't that sound completely egregious? And yet, we are somehow okay with seeing this every day in the news.
Right, and it's become, like not just Elon Musk and other people are doing this, but it's become like, you look at the stars, you look at the Kardashians, and yeah, they can have a $10,000 dollhouse and a $50,000 party for their children, but the most people, when they have a one-year-old or a two-year-old party, they spend $100 on pizza and some balloons. So the thing is, they're promoting, you know, having children, and like you say, in a way, it is bribery, but they're not telling you the truth that a child, once it comes into the world, it needs financial support, emotional support, mental support, physical support. And yes, the parents have brought the child into the world, and the elders and the grandparents and the community need to be around for that child. So I think either we are somehow or the other, those of us like you, my friend Nandita and Ellen and myself and Ali, we do have to speak up. So give us your website where people can go and learn more about what the work that you guys are doing at Population Balance.
Thank you. Yes, it's populationbalance.org. And if there are any community members, organizers, teachers, or professors who are listening, we offer free presentations and lessons to university and high school classrooms all across the world. We do virtual and in person. And we also run a very popular podcast called the Overpopulation Podcast.
Wow.
That's great.
You know, I would love to have you call back again because the topics and the things you speak about are really hard issues that people need to think about because we're watching so many countries are overpopulated and there's a rush to the southern border and people are missing the big picture that it's not just a baby being born. They're humans. They grow up and they have needs and wants and they will come. You can't fix immigration policy unless you fix the education in the world about comprehensive sex education. And I know you're Indian like myself and we're watching even in India they're taking a stance to educate the girls and the boys in all the villages. And they're using whatever means they have possible. And I like that approach. I watch all the time and I see that they're trying their best to educate people there. And I appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you. And education, honestly, is the first and the most important step because when people have power over their own lives, they have power over their own bodies, they make decisions that are good for themselves. And we know, when we look at women especially, when you look at women who have choices and who have control, they tend to have smaller families. They tend to make decisions that are good for themselves and that are good for their kids. And we need to make that a reality for everyone. Not just because it matters for the children, but because the world that they're going to inherit is increasingly becoming imperiled and uninhabitable. So that's the other part of children's rights we have to consider, is what world are we bringing the children into? They're going to experience 5 to 7 times worse conditions than our generation or previous generations have had to. So is that fair for the next generation to live such imperiled lives?
Once again, a whole nother show. So we need to bring you back so we can have more conversations about this. And thank you so much for calling in. We'll make sure that we share all of your information on our Facebook page as well as our blog, which will include the replay of today's show. So thank you so much for calling in, but we're going to listen to our sponsors real quick, and we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends after these messages.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County and Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress
and
Furniture.
Need it fast. MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 13 locations, including one in Volusia County. With so many MedFast urgent care centers, there is a MedFast near you. MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. Just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST.
Are you longing for a taste MedFast of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine in or take out as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro. 2447 North
Located
Wickham
in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroadsFinancial.com.
Chalk Hall Financial
Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Choctaw Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With 3 locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County. Contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff
Financial Group. There's something special about the place
today.
We call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We're heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere.
That's right. So if you have a listening device with you right now, you can hear us live. You just hit that Listen Live button on 1510wwbc.com, or you can catch our archive shows there as well as on our website, which is SitaMediaInc.com, and also on our Facebook page, Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and Sita Media Inc.
So what a great first segment we have.
I learned something
Nandita Bajaj.
I learned something big. What was that called again? Human
supremacy.
Supremacy.
Yeah, she is the executive director of Population Balance. And boy, she took the time to call in. She's also a professor, mm-hmm. and she is really concerned about our world and the situation we have right now. Okay. So, you know, after the Robb Elementary shooting in Uvalde, Texas, okay. I was on Facebook and I saw this beautiful woman, Dianara Salazar, the owner of Math Rocks. She's a math specialist. She had written a post, and it attracted my attention. She wanted to make sure that the children in Uvalde had a place where they can go to for homework help after school. And she had taught at many grade levels in school, and she found that the children needed help. And even though they had tutoring and they had after school help, they still needed more help. So she went ahead and she formed this group, this business that she has. It's called Math Rocks.
Cool.
And it was amazing because after back and forth, I was able to communicate with her and we started chatting. And I said, I'd like to have you call in on our show and talk a little bit about your business and coaching these children and assisting them with homework. And there she is on the phone right now. So thank you for taking the time to call in. And I'm going to let Allie say your name because she said it so beautifully before.
So welcome, Dianara Salazar.
Yeah, she says it's so beautiful. Welcome, and thank you for taking the time. So you're calling in from Texas. You are actually in Uvalde, Texas right now?
Yes, I am in Uvalde, Texas. That's right.
Well, I offer my condolences, even though it's months after the Robb Elementary shooting, to your friends, your community, and the people out there. But what happened to those children? And thank you for being one of the people that stood up like a hero to help the children who are left there.
Oh, thank you so much. That means so much to me. We are still, of course, so affected by that horrible tragedy. Every day we have reminders of that. And yes, how important to help all our children as much as we can. I'm so blessed by God that He has given me the gift of math and that I can help them in any way, because of course when they come to my tutoring, I do help them with math, but it's so much more.
Yeah.
So much more.
And your bio, when you sent it for me, it's about 7 or 8 pages long, and all I see on it is math, 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 education, math, math specialist. You were educated at Harvard, you went to MIT, you know, have your own business you found, and you operate a math tutoring business for K through college students. My goodness, how do you keep up with all that you're doing? It's amazing.
Thank you. I think it is only God's grace. Definitely. I love to teach math. I love to see children understand it, and then they say, wow, it's not that hard.
And you also founded a few nonprofits as well, and you've gotten numerous awards for math. You know, you've made a lot of us falling in love with math. All I can see is a big old ruler and a compass in front of me. So let's talk about why you founded Math Rocks, and how are you helping the students, the people, the community in Uvalde, Texas, and from what I understand, around the world with Math Rocks.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I founded Math Rocks back in 2007 because we are a rural community here in Uvalde, so we didn't have a place for students to go anywhere to get help for math. And I thought, I feel like this is a calling for me. I went through a brain surgery in 2004, and after that, I really just had this calling to find this. And so I did. And it has been such a wonderful help. So our students have somewhere to go now. And I am so thankful for that. Literally yesterday, I helped a student, and she said, oh, Mom said, I don't know what we would do without you, you know? And she said, my daughter needed the help. Her homework is due today and Monday, and I don't know where we'd be. So it has been a huge blessing to help my community, because my community is definitely underserved community, and it needed a lot of help, definitely.
Well, you are certainly a young leader within the Hispanic community where you live. Judging by all the things that you do, you've taken your role as a young Hispanic educated woman to heart, and you're doing so much to help other people. Where do you get your optimism from and your inspiration to do what you're doing?
Definitely my optimism is from God.
Yeah.
Definitely. We all face struggles, and I have my own struggles, but I just know in my heart that He is going to help me through everything that I do, everything. And I just have a lot of faith that He will see me through all my challenges, no matter what they may be, and that He will help me because He placed this in my heart. And He knows that it's for the students, my community that I love. I love Uvalde. I love the people of Uvalde, Texas. I was basically raised here. I moved here at the age of 7, and I was raised in Uvalde. And for all the teachers in the past that helped me, I want to give back. I want to give back to my community however I can.
So you're fluent in English and Spanish, and you're also elementary Polish and Japanese. That's quite a combination. How'd you come up with those two combinations, Polish and Japanese?
I am learning Polish because of a priest that we have here in the valley, part of Joshua. He inspired me to learn Polish, and he's moved on now to Santa Maria, Texas, but that's where that came from. In Japanese, just because I wanted to teach my students how to say the numbers in other languages.
Oh,
and
fine.
So they started learning the numbers in Japanese and in Polish. So that's where that came from.
And you have such a big heart, because in addition to Math Rocks, you also founded something earlier on called My Teacher Rocks. And it was a ceremony dedicated to recognizing talented teachers in the Uvalde area, which we all know not everyone takes the time to appreciate teachers. We watch in all 50 states where teachers are just saying they are overworked, underpaid, understaffed, classrooms are crowded, and nobody takes the time to appreciate them. But you decided that you were going to appreciate the talented teachers in Uvalde, Texas. How awesome.
Thank you so much. Yes, I began my Teacher Rocks in 2013 because I was a teacher and I saw the struggles. I knew what they were. I knew the amount of work that they put in. And like you said, sometimes not recognized. So I said, I'm gonna do this for them, for all the teachers out there that are wonderful teachers that really, really do all their best to help our students. And sometimes they don't get a thank you, you know. And so what students do is they make a video and they submit the video to me. And then I have people that help me judge the videos. And so they tell me who they're nominating, why they're nominating that person. And we go from there. We pick winners. And then we have from 6 to 10 winners every year.
Wow.
And it's wonderful.
That's amazing.
They see the videos, and they just, you know, they melt.
You're keeping them engaged in your community. That's what you're doing. So for our listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we're speaking with Dianara Salazar, and she's a math specialist, and she founded her group, organization, her work, her business.
Her purpose.
It's called Math Rocks, and there's an exclamation mark at the end of it, and it makes me excited. So why, tell us, Dianara, why is math so importante?
Yes, math. It is so important because when you can do math, you are unstoppable. It's not only about the math, but it's when you can figure out formulas and you can figure out how numbers work, it opens your eyes and you're able to see that math is everywhere. And you cannot have a cell phone without math, you know?
Yeah. You can't do anything without math. I mean, you can't cook without math. You have to have to know your math. So, I mean, you are bringing back such wonderful memories of when I learned algebra way back then, and I learned about sets, you know. And I
better spell that word.
Yeah, and we were like, oh my God, I learned how to do it. So tell us about the children that you help. How does people find you, or how do you find them? Is it a referral system, or are you part of the school system there? How does Math Rocks with an exclamation mark find the people?
So the way people find me here in Uvalde is mostly a lot of times through Facebook. They'll look for my number there, or maybe they just Google it, right? And then they send me a text, and they say, I'm interested. Do you have any room available? And so I'll send them a schedule, and I'll tell them what's available, and then we talk. After the intro, I like to talk to them. I want to hear about their child, what is exactly going on with their child, and that way I can put them in the best place to help them. And that way I can turn their life around. I mean, there is no reason why children should be afraid of math or why they can't do it. They can. They just need a little help.
Yeah, Dianara, how do you help them understand how crucial math is to everything else as the kids are aging, and that it becomes a tool like a hammer or a screwdriver or something? Mm-hmm. It's mandatory to have one.
Right, absolutely. One way I know that I speak to them a lot about as they get older, because sometimes I have them from 4, 5, 6 all the way to high school. You know, first of all, if they need a degree, right, if they want to go get any kind of degree, they need to take college algebra. They need to take college algebra. If they do not understand college algebra, they cannot get their degree. Whether the degree is in nursing or even teaching, right, or whatever it is, veterinarian, they've got to have that basic right there. And a lot of times I find that is the one class that keeps them from. And I don't want that for them. I want them to be able to say, I can be anything that I want to be, and that is not an obstacle for me.
Right.
No matter.
So why do you think so many parents and students are afraid of math? Like, I don't see that kind of anticipation or anxiety with math of course, I'm Indian, you know, my background is from India. Indian people love math. It's like the zeros. They fight over where the zero was originated. And you would find children with no shoes on their feet, with raggedy clothes, sitting learning under a tree in some parts of India and the Caribbean, schools with no air conditioning. People are bringing just a tiny piece of bread to school, but they love math. They know math. They want to learn. Where is the disconnect with children in other parts of the world that are so afraid of math?
Yes, I think you described it really well. I think a lot of it is the need. You know, when you are like myself, I was born in Mexico. I wasn't born here. You know, very poor too. So I had that need. I felt that urgency. And sadly, I think that sometimes that's what our students here in the U.S. lack. They lack that urgency. Even the parents, you know, because we are doing okay. We're not, you know, in poverty. And so we know people that are in poverty know that math is a powerful tool to get out of poverty.
That's right. So take us back to that day in Uvalde, Texas, at Robb Elementary School. You were there. And can you tell our listeners a little bit about that day and how it affected you and your community?
Yes, ma'am. I was here when it happened. I was actually spending the night with my boyfriend, and he works at the district. So I learned about the whole tragedy through him. He ran to his office and to get on the cameras to see what was going on, because he still didn't know what was going on. I literally took myself to Robb. I drove out there because I had students at Robb. And so I drove out there and I parked, and I saw the helicopters. I saw the people that were so confused about what was going on. We really didn't know. And so we were just there. So many people just there by the road, you know, waiting. We had gone off to the edge so that other cars could go in. But it was a day that of so confusion, so much confusion, you know, until later on that we found out what happened. But that day right there, people didn't know how horrible it was.
Yeah, and I would think that you were one of the people that were there to comfort some of the students and the families that you knew. But you also talk a lot about the other teachers. What is the importance of all these teachers coming together in underserved areas like Uvalde, Texas? What is Math Rocks with the exclamation mark, your business, doing to have other teachers on board to help in these areas?
Yes. Oh, yes. The teachers here in Uvalde completely support my tutorials. They understand that if I have one of their children, right, one of their students, that they're going to come to me, they're going to get help, I'm going to send them back, and then they're going to be better in their classroom. They even turn out to be helpers in their classroom. You know, sometimes students come to me, they go back and they say, I told my teacher that I had learned such and such, and then they help out. And the teachers are so wonderful, so happy. They're so supportive, and I want to support them back. You know, I want us to be, through all of this education that we provide, I want us to always be together. Always.
In the aftermath of the massacre at Robb Elementary School, we all watch on the various news outlets that the children that passed away and the children that are left in Uvalde, Texas, they all have hopes and dreams. They all, you know, they dream big, and it's simple things that they want, so many of them. What can us, all of us around the country, what can we do to help the children of Uvalde, Texas, in that community where you live? Because we all felt like we belonged. We all felt like we could be doing more for the children. What else can we do to help you and your community and tell people about Math Rocks?
Oh, thank you so much. You just give me an idea. How about if people like the way that we do the My Teacher Rocks Awards? How about if people make a video for our students here in Uvalde and I can share it with them? How beautiful, right?
How about if you just send us their
thoughts through a video, because it's so powerful that way. That is why I decided to do video. It is so powerful if we can get people from all over the country.
Yeah, so we could still celebrate the lives of the people there, even though the tragedy has gone. And people, you know, so many times we see what's happening with the news and it becomes sensational for the first 3 or 4 days, and then after that it just fizzles out and fades away. So maybe we would do that for you and send you a nice little video from the three of us at our station that we're thinking about you. You know?
That would be wonderful, yes. Because now we have our schools are surrounded by, you know, gates and things and fences, you know? And so that is a reminder for them all the time. And I don't know exactly, you know, how they're affected by that, but they must be affected when they see their schools like that.
So, in addition to you teaching math and all that, you also write. Tell us a little bit about your creative writing that you do as well.
I love to write. I have diaries upon diaries. I love to write because it is a way of expressing what I sometimes cannot express in words.
And so originally, I think my idea for the book is changing a little bit, because originally I thought about writing a book after the whole tragedy, but it has taken a turn. I have seen a lot of pain. I have seen how so many people are affected in so many ways that I really find myself not qualified to write that book, because there are so many things that I don't know. And so, well, I want to change that, and I'm right now I'm just kind of thinking of ideas about other ways to write something that would be meaningful and that would help.
Well, the word two words multitasker comes to mind when we speak with you, Dianara Salazar. Yes. Now, we have 2 minutes left, and I, after all I've read about you and I've seen your Facebook post and I've seen your posting, your heart is filled with pure gold, I tell you. I think, you know, you should run for office yourself. We need young women who are so ambitious and full of so much energy and life and creative to help others in our country, not just in Uvalde, Texas, but what you do resonates with people all over the world, all over the United States. So is that in the future for you, you think?
I haven't really thought about that, but for some reason you remind me of Mother Teresa. I love Mother Teresa. I adore Mother Teresa.
She, we call her Mother Sita.
And I want to help children like she did. I want to just love on children like she did, you know? And so that's a little inspiration of mine. But I have not thought about office only because I know that I affect children so much.
But you know, the children are the future of not just Uvalde, Texas, but the future of our entire world. And we all learn from each other, right? And so we have to be the change we wish to see. And your heart and your education and what you are doing for the children in Uvalde, Texas, and the people there are so many of them, they're not very wealthy. All they want is an opportunity and an education so that their children could be something that they were not. So, and you're making it happen through Matt Rocks. How can we support Matt Rocks? Can you give us your website before we go off air so maybe people could look it up and see what you're doing?
You can find it on Google. If you find Matt Rocks, because it's really, really long. It's not a short one, so I don't have it memorized.
Yes.
But definitely, if you just Google it, you'll see. If you put Matt Rocks and then put Uvalde, that's me.
Yes. And you have to put the exclamation mark if you're on Facebook, I noticed. And I love that you did that, because it distinguishes you from other math groups that are on Facebook. Well, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to call in. And maybe the next time you call in, you can have a student with you. And we can do a show, you know, and the student could talk to us too and let us know how your tutoring in math helped him or her.
Oh, absolutely. We'd love to do that. Yes.
Fantastic. It's another great education today. Thank you so much for calling in. Happy New Year. And happy all future things for Math Rocks, for sure, and all of the folks at Uvalde, Texas.
Thank you so much. Yes. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Another fantastic episode of Viewpoint with Sita and Friend Sita. Fantastic guests.
Yes.
Isn't
she wonderful? I feel like she's sitting
really
here with
wonderful.
Us.
Really wonderful. I know. Next time, maybe. Maybe when she flies over. So tune in next week, where each and every Monday we are on air with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here on 1510 WWBC. We'll see you next week.